Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
That was probably like the most stressful time of my life.
Were you making art during that time?
I was making some work. It was kind of scattered and in between. I had a studio off my kitchen, like in the nook. I made that a studio and it was here or there. You know, it was when I fit and when I had energy to. I didn't even have like probably at that time a lot of even energy for myself at all. It was a lot. But then when they got, I got to school, when I got older, the art got to come back. The idea started to come back. It became, you know, and then of course I have baby again.
It is my honor to welcome artist Kalita Garcia Rawls to the podcast. Kalita merges photorealism with poetic abstraction in her paintings depicting African-American women and men submerged in glistening water. Kalita received her BA in art at Spelman College and her MA in painting at New York University. Her work has been included in exhibitions at the LACMA Inglewood Art and Film Lab in Inglewood, California, the San Francisco Arts Commission, the Rush Arts Gallery in New York, among many others. She is the mother to three daughters and one son, and I'm really excited to hear more about her life and her work and her art today. Kalita, thank you so much for joining me on the Artist Mother Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Okay, so give us some context. Tell us a little bit about your journey so far, maybe starting with, something that got you interested in art in your earlier years and the path that brought you to today.
What got me interested in art in my earlier years? I mean, I think I've been drawing since I was in preschool. And I remember feeling really proud of myself. Yeah, like in kindergarten over some dinosaur I drew. And I remember the teacher like making this big deal about how well I guess I was able to draw it, that she took me out of the classroom to another class to show this teacher and was like, we're going to have to really nurture this with her. Look, she didn't trace this. And I remember feeling like, oh, I could do something a little different than other people, or it was unique. It made me. It was like these teachers talking about me in front of me. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. And I just kept drawing. And even when I was a child, I was like drawing pictures of Garfield and cartoons for like a quarter.
Like you're like the third artist I've interviewed that as a kid would like sell drawings to other kids. It's so cool.
Yeah. It was like, that was the thing. I was like, I could draw you. What cartoon do you want? Yeah. Let me see. And I'd sell it for quarters or, 50 cents maybe if it was really intense. And then that was really fun.
Yeah.
And that got me into it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then you went on and like you went to art school. Mm-hmm. Like you kind of knew that was the path for you and committed to education in art. Did you go like right for your BA and then MA? Was all that like right together? Did you take any years off?
No. And I look back, I kind of wish I did take years off in between. Mm-hmm. I think I wish I was a little bit more developed or mature before I went in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did it all at once.
Okay. Once. Cool. And before we like kind of dive into more about your life, can you describe what your work looks like? Many people I'm sure are going to know who you are, especially like recently. I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but, you had a big painting selected for Ta-Nehisi Coates' new book. So it's kind of like a big deal, I'm sure for you and for many people. So, but if just in case anybody listening doesn't know what your work looks like, could you just describe what your paintings are and what they look like?
I do figures of African Americans in water for the most part. And I like to break the body kind of apart. You see the ripples of the water on the body and it makes the body itself become abstracted. Mm-hmm. I think looking at, the form through another lens, like water, mm-hmm. It's just so fascinating. I think it's underneath all of my work. And then putting the body in a different form of pressure is just so draws me in, mm-hmm. and then finding the beauty of what that looks like.
And like, you know, portraiture, has that always been something that you've explored? I think I saw on an Instagram post that you kind of, you had this moment of finding the water as like the metaphor that you wanted to explore and use. But I'm curious to know, like, if portraiture was always something you were doing before that, and then, you know, you kind of got to this point where you merged both.
Yeah, I think so. I think I always loved drawing the figure, for sure. And then portraiture became, yeah, obviously in a natural way to draw the figure. Mm-hmm. And it seems as I'm getting older or developing in my art, it's becoming more abstracted in the form. Mm. And it kind of is leaving a little portraiture, I'd say, to me. You know, mm-hmm. it's become something other. Yeah.
And what about like when you found the water? What did that mean?
So when I found the water, so for a long time, I think I painted all different things, like different portraits, or I was always just exploring how to express myself exactly. And when I started swimming, I didn't learn to fully swim until an adult. And when I was in the water and looking at the light through the water, looking at my body through the water, I mean, I think it became more of like almost like a yoga or meditative thing of just having to really breathe. Mm-hmm. And I'm in like this, I took this swim class. I want to say it's actually a master swim club for people that really swim. And I showed, and coach was like, here's a kickboard, just kick back and forth. I don't know what you're doing. And she thought I was like going to quit, but I didn't quit. I went there for, you know, which is kind of ridiculous. And I don't know, I thought I was a better swimmer until I showed up and I was like, wait, I can't get across once. Really?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I hope I don't die or drown. But I had a kickboard and I really learned properly how to swim. Mm. Now, you know, I try anyway to go at least 2-3 times a week, and I'm swimming like in the middle of the, you know, with the heat. So mm-hmm. I'm better. But like by doing that exercise and actually like in that break of not speaking mm-hmm. really, like the class is an hour or the team, you know, they practice for now, and like just going back and just making myself breathe back and forth. Like I just feel lighter. Mm-hmm. And, that form of exercise, or maybe even, like I said, it feels like yoga breathing exercise, like back, you know, just taking myself whole in that way. I felt like I wanted to blend that into the art. Mm. Wanted to even discuss some difficult, maybe even divisive subjects, but make it in a way that's holistic, or talking to the spirit, or being, you know, making it lighter, mm-hmm. looking at it in a different way. And I think when I started using water as a visual language in my work, I could talk about things I've talked about before in a different way. Mm. People maybe more open for people, you know, for others to take it in. Mm-hmm. Like even if it's somewhat political, it's not polemic, it's not in someone's face, it's not even like aggressively done. Mm-hmm. And it could be there, or it doesn't have to be there. It could just be a beautiful painting if someone wants that, or it could be much more.
Mm. And what are some of the things specifically that you feel like you know, you're wanting the water to address in your work?
I think water itself is something that is spiritual healing. It feels so good. It has so many meanings in different cultures, but it's also something that's very scary. Mm-hmm. Something that could, you know, you could die in, you know, something that when you get in a pool, you have to like, let go. Mm-hmm. And I feel like,
let alone like an ocean or a river or you know, something not controlled.
Yeah. You can't control, even if you're in a pool and if it's over how tall you are, if you can't stand, mm-hmm. you really have to relax mm-hmm. to float. Like if you're tense, you'll go down, but if you can just relax, and I feel like that in my life, like it's stressful mm-hmm. with all my kids, with my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm juggling. I'm always like, oh, I'm not taking a breath. Sometimes mm-hmm. I picture myself not breathing, mm-hmm. holding it in. And then it's like in that water, you know, you just feel lighter. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, yeah, I can get more clarity.
Mm-hmm. And water
has become that peace of mind. The pieces that you're putting in the water, they are like, they're accepting. Well, like I said, it's like my own life metaphor. I'm not in control of things. Mm-hmm. And I have to let go. Mm-hmm. And it said, you know, change is the only constant. And I have to accept change in life. I have to let the waves come under me, the good ones, the bad ones, the scary ones, and just, you know, just have faith. Mm.
It's so true. And I do love that feel. I'm not like a swimmer or anything, but I do love that feeling of water. Like, it's like this surrendering, you know, because like you can't control it, but it also feels like it's lifting you up, you know, like that buoyancy that you talked about. It's like, I don't know, it's a good, definitely a good metaphor for thinking about other things. And I like the sort of image of your work having this painterly lens, but also like this lens of the water too. Like there's kind of multiple, you know, multiple lenses and things that you can think about and view in your work. Talk to me too about like it says in your artist statement that you sometimes include like maps of cities within the work. Is that like within the image of the water, like you're kind of reflecting some of the topographical elements of a city, or like, well, talk to me about that.
There's this one painting, I don't know if people go on my website, North and Penn is a great example of that. North and Penn, Freddie Gray. So the body itself is completely submerged. I mean, and the hand is coming out, but part of the body, I was really responding to the politics going around Baltimore.
Mm. When Freddie Gray. Yeah.
Right. And when I thought of that and the riots that happened there, like this turbulent space and environment there, the riots started there. Well, yeah, that was like the pinnacle of where it was in North and Penn, that corner. Mm-hmm. The body itself kind of looked like that. But then in the body, I put an aerial view of the Baltimore Harbor. Mm. You can't, like, if I could show you a point.
Like if you kind of laid a map over it translucently, you could see. That's really cool.
But you can't see it in, like, you would know that. Like, yeah. A lot of the works have those type of elements in there. These hidden little Easter eggs in the painting.
Yeah, I love that. I love sort of, you know, again, another lens of, like, adding this layer of meaning to the work. I think it's really powerful. Definitely. People who are listening, pull up that painting because it's gorgeous. And I can't imagine, like, I would love to see your work in person. I feel like your work, you know, there's so many people that I interview and like, I feel like I can get a really good description of or depiction of what their work is like online, but yours, I'm like, I just got to stand in front of one of these because I know they're like, you know.
And they're larger because that piece there is, that one is 6 feet by... Mm-hmm. I don't remember right now. It's on there. It's on the end. 5 by 6, I think. But this one piece, the largest piece I just finished for my show coming up in February, mm-hmm. is 7 feet by 12 feet.
Oh my gosh. Is that the biggest painting you've ever done?
Biggest painting I've ever done, yes.
Oh, and my word.
I think people really feel immersed in the water. I wanted to go larger for that. So I have other pieces in there that are 6 feet by 7 feet. So when you stand in front of it, the figures in it, in a couple of them, are larger than life. Mm. But the water, you'll be able to stand and feel like you're a little bit immersed in it.
Tell me about that show. Is that like your biggest solo show that you've had? Like, you know, just talk about kind of how that came about and how you're preparing and working towards it right now. You know, you have a few months until the show, but we're going to hopefully release this episode the week of the show opening. So people will be able to kind of feel that momentum as you've worked toward it, but you're in the thick right now. I'm sure you're like barely have time to even interview me. So thank you so much, but talk a little bit about that show.
Yes, I'm working many hours, some 12 hour days, 10 hour days, eight, but I'm working at least 6 days a week. Mm-hmm. And It's like my, I feel like a little bit of my come out show. Like, yeah. Oh, now I'm going to pull out all the tools in my toolbox and like,
it's awesome.
I'm excited about that. So that's motivating me to have that opportunity. And it came about, wonderful gallery, Various Small Fires in Hollywood, California. One of their other artists that they represent, Diedrich Brackens. He's actually the model for me for that North and Penn piece. But he's an artist that's doing wonderful, amazing work. But he knew of my work and he told them about me. And then he came and did a studio visit. And then we started a relationship and a talk. And so that's how the show came about.
Oh, I'm so excited for you. Can't wait to see images of it and see that work, you know, see that big, huge painting hanging on their gallery walls. And how many paintings are you making for that show?
Probably 7.
Okay.
Seven pieces in the main gallery. And then there's another room where I'll have a lot of the pieces that I did 6 paintings for the Ta-Nehisi book cover. Mm-hmm. So each of those will be displayed in like the other room. Because, you know, they chose the one in the front and the back, but there were other ones that, you know, was a part of it. So it was an opportunity to share them with people.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that process? Like how did that come about and what was your connection there? And I guess they commissioned a piece for the cover and you were, like you just said, you had to make multiple ones and then they kind of chose. Like how did that all work and what did that feel like?
That was exciting. So how that really came is I actually knew Ta-Nehisi for many years. Mm-hmm. So I knew him from when we were both like 18, 19 years old before he became the Ta-Nehisi coach that people know about. So we've known each other for a bit, but I was very close to his wife who came to town a couple years ago, I guess, and came to my studio and she saw my work and how I started going into the water. And when Ta-Nehisi was going to be in LA to finish this book that he was working on, he came to LA just to get a break from, you know, just almost like an artist retreat he made for himself.
Right.
His wife said, come to my, you gotta go see Lee. She's doing stuff at water, just go. And so we had arranged for him to come to the studio. I was just thinking I was going to show it to him, you know, just say lunch and show him the work. And when he saw the work, he was like, tell me about it. So I was telling him about the water and what it does. And especially certain pieces I did at that time, there were a lot of myself and me becoming part of the water, like a dissolving of myself. And I was really just getting a handle of it. And how I feel like through water, it's like a place for me, as I was telling you about feeling uplifted or talking about different subjects, but also it's like almost time travel. Like I can move through water and talk about anything. Mm-hmm. And so when I was telling him that, that's when he was like, wow, I'm writing a book with water. And then it was just kind of like coincidence, I guess, or just the right timing. Yeah. He was like, my stuff is, I'm doing something with water. And he was like, really? And I'm doing it. He was like, would you be interested in doing an image to see what, for the cover, just to see. And he was like, I can't guarantee that you'll get it, but they already have, you know, the people at Random House that do the covers. But would you mind trying? So I did one. I sent it to him. I knew I was going to do at least 3 just to give him options. But I did the first one and I just texted him. I was like, I just finished this one. I'm going to show you 3 more. And he took my text and then sent it right to the publishers. I was like, wait, you know, but he... like we love it. And I was like, well, I have more. Don't like, and then I just kept, did the 3. And then he was like, well, keep doing more. And I was like,
how many do you need?
But then he was like, well, can you do one that could be like could be a wraparound? And I was like, oh, so I just kept doing. So it ended up being like 6. And I was like, okay, we're done. Y'all.
Yeah. Fine. Make it work.
Yeah. Make something work. But he was sending them to the editors as they were editing the book, as I was, each one as they were coming along, and then he would give me, you know, so it was really fun. And then they end up getting the rights to 4 of them that you see in ads and pieces because they really like the works. I was very blessed.
That's awesome. So does he like, is Ta-Nehisi, is he going to own one of the originals or like, yeah.
He was like, these are mine. I was like, yeah, I know.
I mean, that's cool too. Just thinking about like, who's collecting your work and what, you know, what those people like do and accomplish in the world. And I don't know, it just feels special. Like whenever there's someone who collects my work that like I really respect and admire, it just feels like an extra level of dang, like really you want a piece of my work, you know? Oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy that, I don't know, you know, just that timing lined up because that your work looks great as a book cover. It's just so cool to see. Just cool to see too, like how, you know, a painter, you know, can kind of transcend just outside the gallery. Like obviously we know there's many opportunities for art to be and live in the world, but like for it to be on a book cover and a book that like from a writer that, you know, is writing very important things right now, you know, I just feel like that must feel really good.
It does. Honor.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about like what kind of like what your day-to-day life is like. You know, you have 4 kids and you've been an artist your whole life. You know, so I'm just interested to hear you talk a little about how old is your youngest?
My youngest is 4.
Okay.
My oldest is 26. So he doesn't even like, he's in New Jersey. He's like a grown man.
Okay.
So 3 small kids or 3 kids I have to really monitor.
Yeah. But so you have like a high school daughter, a middle schoolish daughter, and then an elementary age daughter. And so I imagine that your life is pretty wild and full and you've got a lot going on. You know, just like, can you just kind of walk us through like maybe what a week in your life looks like or something, like how you manage everything? And, you know, I think it'd be interesting to maybe after that to hear you talk just a little bit about like some of the ways things have changed for you as your kids have gotten older.
Yeah. Well, especially with this show going on, I've been blessed with my partner, my husband, who has been holding it down with those kids because I've been doing a lot of hours.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm doing it right now, is him totally picking up the kids and taking them to school. I come in at this very moment, these months, is I'm the more of the morning person, the breakfasts, and I feel guilty of my kid like not eating certain things. So I'm always like, I'm basically make little meals in the morning for their lunch, like hot lunches. So I'm like cooking like 3 different meals. Like I wake up and there's like the breakfast and like pasta for this one and heating up samosas for this one this morning. This one likes this. I make these different like hot lunches with mother guilt of what they're going to eat through the day.
Yes, yes.
And then I go to the studio after everyone is off. My husband takes them to school. And then I paint. Sometimes I come home enough for dinner, you know, and then go back to the studio. I'm gonna eat like afterward, or I may just come back before putting the baby to bed some days. But this is, since the show is more on heat, really usually not like that. And usually like do one of the pickups or something and then home in the evenings. It's just right now, it's just become more intense. But it is on weekends, or at least, you know, like sometimes I'll take the kid, like one of them. They haven't been come to the studio recently. I would sometimes take them in and work, but I'm not able to really work with that looking, you know, whether I can't, or I want to do an art project with them.
Yeah.
But it's like a catch up time on weekends of like doing all my Amazon shopping. So I can go to the store. I'm like, what do y'all need? Like,
yeah.
Whose underwear don't fit anymore? Okay. Stop that. Endless, or folding clothes, washing clothes. It's just like the catch up of all of those things. There's always someone that doesn't fit their clothes. Like some is like, I didn't notice, or buying this or certain groceries or the, you know, the staples of the house. It's just that becomes the in-between.
Totally. I hope you are enjoying this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast. As many of you know, we are so much more than a podcast, more like a community with a podcast. I'm so proud of the amazing network of artist mothers that has come together and continues to grow. And it is my mission to provide support for artists who are caretakers, to share their stories and create outlets for connection and growth. If you'd like to get more involved in what we're doing, please check out our website, artistmotherpodcast.com, to see our Crit Group program, exhibition lineups, retreat schedule, and to find out if we are doing a meetup or event near you. There are additional resources on our website, along with full blog posts from every episode that share photos of the artists we interview. If you are a fan or a loyal listener of this podcast, please consider supporting our work on Patreon. You can donate as little as $2 a month. That's less than 50 cents an episode to help us continue this work. Go to patreon.com/artistmotherpodcast. For updates and to see more from our community, make sure you find us on Instagram at artistmotherpodcast. Now, back to the episode. So what was it like? Were your kids always in childcare, or did you kind of, you know, were you more of the primary caregiver when they were younger? Because I'm sure, you know, you have a four-year-old, so you're pretty recently out of that sort of phase of like having a baby in the house. What, like, do you feel like things have changed drastically recently, or was it kind of always more like that?
Yeah, no, it's changed drastically. And I feel like I've been every type of mother, honestly, and all, like, in my, I feel like when my stepson came to live with us, I was more like a helicopter mom, because I was more like trying to understand and get it. And then with my two daughters, the two oldest ones, they were 2.5 years apart. And at that point, there were a few years I did stay home with them. And so I was home with them, and then my son, you know, it was like the teenager watching him, and then like two little small kids. That was probably like the most stressful time of my life.
Were you making art during that time?
I was making some work. It was kind of scattered and in between. I had a studio off my kitchen, like in the nook. I made that a studio. And it was here or there, you know, it was when I could and when I had energy to. I didn't even have like probably at that time a lot of even energy for myself at all. It was a lot. But then when they got to school, when I got older, the art got to come back. The idea started to come back. It became, you know, and then of course I have baby again, right when I was done. I was like, no, this is getting too easy.
Yes.
Yep. I can see myself fully. No, I can't do that. I must have another child. So I lose some of that. But it was great too, because that's when I started swimming. I was pregnant with her. I was already swimming a little bit. I just learned.
Yeah.
But it helped me through, like not getting too stressed about it. Mm. And I was just like, okay, I got really nervous, honestly, with me being pregnant with her, and in my husband and I, that kind of pact, like, this is not going to, like, you're getting in the rhythm of painting again, and you're really getting back, but she's going to be motivation rather than a, like, something that will hinder or slow it down. She's going to be motivation, and I had to take on that mindset and, like, keep using her in my head of, like, you know, just not letting it slow down the steps, because it's not, you know, it's easy. There's so many distractions with children or no children. So many ways to put your energy and space someplace. And I had to let go of certain things. Like, my house cannot be as clean as I want it to be. You know, it's just, I had to let go of that type of keeping it organized at a certain level, or, you know, just like something has to give.
And so. What about like being an artist, you know, do you feel like there are any things you sort of compromised on within sort of this is what an artist is and does and how they exist in the world? But like, it's really hard to fulfill all of those things when you're also a mom. Do you feel like, you know, there is anything that you kind of had to let go of in terms of what it means to be an artist because of motherhood?
Can't go to as many openings
as
I'd like to. I do go to some, and there will be moments where I'll go to a few, but now I'm kind of like, especially with the show coming, like, all I have right now is this like painting of my kids. Like, I can't social thing as much, or like, you know, sometimes you want to be your face and network and, you know, And that's not happening right now because those are the two top priorities and I'm just focused on that. The compromise would be, yeah, I had to be flexible in the different phases of where I am in my productivity. Mm. You know, sometimes, and then there were moments, I think, especially when I was, when the oldest two girls were two and a half, or maybe like when they were one and three, or that moment, like when I was just listening to ABCs all the time and looking at Sesame Street, my brain was just so much into like them trying to learn things. Like, in like, I knew every park in the area that was great for different age groups, but I might not have known what galleries were showing anything. Yeah. You know, I couldn't tell you who were the new artists to look for. I was too involved in just making their development, you know, a certain way they wanted it at the point. So I was more like that with them. And my youngest child, I'm so blessed that she has the two older sisters here because they make up for this tension that she has these older sisters and my husband. And then I come in and I just make sure I get on a rug with her or draw something with her or read to her at night. And just give her my moments that I can right now. And I crave for even more, doing her hair and doing those things. But it's even a different, now I'm a different parent. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm older too. It's like I'm an older parent. Mm. So I kind of feel like I realize that she'll get it all or she'll learn it. Mm-hmm. You know, before it's kind of like flashcards, A, B, C.
Yes.
It was like a 3 month old. I'm like showing him the, you know,
yes.
Like she'll learn to read early. You know what I mean? She'll be like the genius baby. And now it's like, she'll learn to read.
Yeah. Yes.
Why does she need to know it a year earlier? That competition with myself of believing that you needed to, like, maybe my kid, you know, like you give this kid at this certain head start. I mean, you want to, you know, definitely nurture. I read to my kids tonight, but you know, I kind of let go.
Yeah.
Some of those things, like she'll get it. She's fine. And I just try to make sure, like even with my teenager, to pop into her room and lay on her bed, ask her about, like, you know, who she's following on Instagram or that's not Instagram, it's some other thing. And just like be involved in what she's doing and with her world a little bit, like just listening to her. I like to talk to her and see where she is. And it makes me reminisce on my teenage years. And it's scary, but also so rewarding to see what a beautiful young lady she's becoming. Mm. My middle child, it's like she's into sports and basketball and trying to go to a game when I can. I feel bad I miss a lot of her games, but I look forward to going to the ones after the show and being there when I can and just listening. There's, you know, calling in when she has a game, calling my husband and finding out how she's doing, or, you know, and, you know, watching her develop with basketball. And then my youngest one just bosses me around.
Do you feel like that momentum kind of, like you were kind of talking before about how you know, you like, as artists, we kind of go through these phases of building up momentum. And, you know, I'm just wondering, like, you also were talking about this parallel idea of like letting go in parenting, you know, and it, you know, I can't help but wonder if, like, as your career has sort of built momentum on itself, like maybe that has influenced a little bit of the letting go, but also not that it, like, in a negative way, but like it might feel, you know, it might feel good. Like you might be allowed, or you might be able to sort of push the momentum because you're in this different phase of parenting where you can step back a little bit and let go. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, but I think you're right. I think it's become all encompassing in my life, in my art and my life, in me right now. Mm-hmm. I feel like, and in my parenting in all different ways, I can't control who my kids are. Like I realize that I was talking to my brother recently on the phone and I was like, I just realized that I'm just like a tour guide in an amusement park. And I'm just like, you know, these rides are dangerous. You're too small for this ride. You can get on this ride and keep your seatbelt on and tell them all the dangers and how to keep your hands in so you don't get hurt. But that's all I'm really can do.
Yeah. It's so true.
I can just But they're going to pick the rides they're going to get on, and they're going to do what they, I just have to give them as much positive reinforcement and try to tell them what I believe would keep them safe. And hopefully they'll believe me and let them go, mm-hmm. And just have faith that I did give them the most support. And they can come to me if there's a problem. Yeah. That's the main thing. Like, I just want my kids to be able to come and talk to me. And other than that, we'll see.
Yeah, you'll see what happens, right? talk to me about them, seeing their mom as an artist and growing up with a mom who's always been committed, to art. I talk to so many people who kind of find art later in their life, or they take a break from art because they didn't have any role models. And I love talking to artists who are raising kids and they're an artist themselves. And I just wonder how that's going to influence those kids, and maybe they won't end up being an artist, but even just exposing them to seeing art and understanding what art can do in the world and, just all of the things that we love about art, it's you're exposing your kids to that. So I'm just curious to hear a little bit about maybe some experiences that you've had, just as, art is your career and you're exposing your kids to it.
No, I think they're all very proud. I think all of them are proud, and I think they're all major supporters. So much so that my two older girls are part of my staff. When I go take pictures, I use photos as a reference while I'm painting, mm-hmm. and they are one's the wave machine, push the wall.
Cool.
And the other person, I need some more movement over here on this side. And the other one, I may be holding up a body, and the other one may be taking a picture, or I'm taking a picture and lift up that arm because I wanted to go. So they are my photography staff, my 11 and 14 year old.
That's awesome.
But they also, so I feel like they feel like they're a part of it. Yeah. And they are definitely proud of what I do. And they are, one of them just walked in. Sorry.
That's okay. Do they ever give you critique? Are they Mom, come on, this painting could have been a little better. You could have done, or are they, yeah.
Definitely. And I appreciate it. Someone's that part right there doesn't look exactly right. And I'm really that where, I love critiques. They are definitely a part of the process. They definitely, I'm sorry. I'm looking at it.
Just bring her over and have her answer.
Sage, you going to answer? How are you with the art really quickly? How are you? I'm doing an interview right now. How are you supportive with the art? She doesn't feel good.
Sorry.
How are you? Are you supportive with the, how do you feel about mommy as an artist?
I like your art.
Yeah, good.
This is the Artist Mother podcast. So we're kind of talking about being an artist and a mom. So, I was just asking your mom, what she thinks you guys think about her as an artist, if you guys are involved in her painting, or, what's your favorite part about your mom being an artist?
My favorite part of being an artist, I like how she paints. Mm-hmm. Because I remember one of my favorite paintings was one of the bubbles and the hair.
Oh, Transcend. She has a part of it, Transcend painting. It's on my website. Yeah.
I like the little details she puts into her paintings because they always mean something, mm-hmm. which I think is cool.
Thank you, Shudipa.
Yeah, we'll wrap up soon so you can get back to giving some love to that girl. okay, so tell me a little bit too about you now you don't have a studio in your home. You have a studio and it sounded like a shared studio space with artists. So, and you're in LA. So you're exposed to a lot of art and culture, kind of right at your fingertips. I'm interested to hear you talk a little bit about maybe some of the transitions that your studio has gone through, and do you like being a part of a co studio space, and what benefits do you have, kind of now working outside the home?
It's awesome. because I think I needed that community. Mm-hmm. I needed feedback and even the growth in my work when I first got to the studio. I'm in it's called the Beacon Arts Building. Everyone there is a working artist for the most part. And in that building, there's so many different artists, different genres, different like styles, and they've become a great support system. Mm. Even like there's like even these hours I've been doing lately, there's certain artists that have been such great cheerleaders for me. And like one, Susan Feldman on the first floor, she'll come and just, I just need to go to her and get a hug sometimes. And I'm like, oh, I'm stressed out. Or Michael Massenburg, this other artist, and he'll come and give me feedback and do a critique. And Rebecca Farr, she's on another floor. Each of these artists are on all different floors, and she'll come in, and it's just like, I need to move a painting. It's so big. I don't know how I'll call one of them. And it's like, I feel like I have another form of family with all these different artists, and they're all supporting me and pushing me forward and telling me I can do it. Because sometimes I have doubts. I get nervous, you know, like, I think it's coming together. I'm really excited with the work and what it's looking like. And I'm trying to push further than I've ever done, but they're way larger in scale than I've done before. And so sometimes I get a little like, you know, lost in it.
Yeah.
And, but it's because of these different artists. And then like my mentor, who's become amazing to me, is Toba Kadori. That artist, like, she's at a different gallery and, just an amazing artist that I admire and way more established, you know, been in it for so much longer and just, an amazing artist. And she will come through and give me advice, and it really, I really appreciate her time and she's been. So it's in this space, like, I have so much support, so many artists that are there for me.
How did you get connected with her as a mentor?
My daughter and her daughter are friends.
Oh, cool.
So they happened to become at school. And so then like her and I began to talk, and then I learned more of her work and, you know, went to her shows, and she's kind of, like I said, has become like a mentor that it's different than my work, but she's very, you know, realistic. And so there were things that she could understand of my process. Mm-hmm. So it's been good.
Okay. Just a couple more questions for you, Kalita. I would love to know, like, what do you feel like you need more of in your life as an artist, or maybe like, what are some challenges that you have, and like, how can you, you know, like, how can you, what do you think you need more of to make your life as an artist better?
Patience with myself. Forgiveness. Telling myself that I'm human. taking care of myself probably better. I think I'm a person that like probably like everyone, I want it all now a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I want to be this great mom, this great wife, this great artist, this great, and there's always seems to be like a something that I'm juggling too many things. So it's like keeping an eye on enough on, you know, everyone and myself. So something gets neglected in the end, and it ends up, I don't know, just my personality will probably be me. Like, I just won't get my hair done forever, or, you know what I mean? Like I'm getting everyone else's clothes. But I'm like, wait a second.
What am I wearing?
Yes.
Do my underwear fit?
Do my underwear fit? Have a hole in them.
Yes.
Are they worse because I put them on too fast to get everyone else ready?
Yeah.
I'm just like, or inside out, like, I'm always like moving too fast on myself to get everyone else ready. Because I want everyone else together. And sometimes I'll neglect myself trying to do for everyone else. And I have to really make time for myself, but it's just so hard. But you have to.
When you do prioritize self-care and making time for yourself, what does that look like?
Swimming.
Yeah. Nice. So that's also kind of, you know, part of your art practice too.
It's a part of my art practice, and it's become, I feel so much better after. I'm like, I'm always like, when I go to swim, it ends up taking like really to go to the pool to swim, to come back. It's like two and a half hours sometimes. If I move like slow, 2 hours out of my day, I'm always like, I can't go. I'm always telling myself I don't have time because it'll take up too much time. And then like after I go, I'm always like, I am so glad I went, but I have to keep myself to go. Like even right now, I'm like, tomorrow I was supposed to go. I am going to go.
Yes.
But like I can think of the work I can make up in that time.
Yeah.
And so then I'll put it and I'm like, no, it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I deserve it. I deserve to breathe in and out. And nobody talking to me. Mm-hmm. And the practice itself of painting is very isolated. But so I listen to audio books most of the time while I paint or listen to music. But audio books have been my thing. Yeah.
What are some good? Well, I'm going to ask you that in the final five. So I was going to say, what are some good books you read? But hold that question for a minute.
It's good.
I would love to know too, like, I think success is a pretty big word in the art world, and we all have sort of different pictures of what success looks like. So I'm curious to know what success means to you.
That is a good one. Somebody asked me that before. I'm trying to think, what was my answer before? I don't have it at my fingertips. I guess I would say success to me is what I'm trying to do in my work, is find peace and accept all the chaos and be okay with it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I feel like I'm successful now.
Yeah.
And I haven't even had the show. I feel happy where I am right now. And I think that's success. Like, just, you know, there's always going to be something. There's always going to be something to be stressed out about, something that I feel like I wish I did or more. But success is accepting my humanity, you know, and in accepting the flaws, you know, try to find the beauty in it all.
That's really beautiful and inspiring, because I also struggle with a lot of self-doubt and, you know, just criticism, really. Not so much self-doubt, but criticism, I think, is more what I struggle with. Like,
but everyone has it.
Yeah.
You know, you can look at the most confident or whatever you think person, and you're just looking at the shell that they're projecting, and some people have a better one than others.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, and you just, all you're looking at, you know, because underneath those shiny shoes, they probably have a hole in their sock.
Or their underwear.
Yeah, or their underwear. So don't worry.
Yes. So good. This has been so good. Okay. So five questions to close, just to help us get to know you a little better. I would love to know what you're currently reading.
I am
listening to, I guess.
I'm listening to right now The Children of Blood and Bones by Tomi. Mess up her last name. Adeyemi. It's very good. I love The Power. I just finished that one before that by Naomi Alderman. It was amazing. Yeah.
Okay. What about Netflix TV? Is there anything you're currently watching?
I'm not looking at anything right now, but I finished that series, Manhunter.
Okay.
Mindhunter.
Yeah.
That was kind of fascinating.
Yeah. I've heard that's really good. And I think I need to check that one out. Okay, Kalita, what would you do if you had a whole weekend to yourself?
Probably paint. I'll be in the studio. And I couldn't paint, or I had to
paint. A whole weekend after your solo show opens. Let's say that.
Take my kids, like, to a hotel. We'd just be at the pool.
That's nice. Yeah, your girls like to swim with you, I'm assuming. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your beverage of choice?
Water.
Nice. Just plain old tap water, sparkling.
Just flat
water. Yeah. Yep. Me too. I like water. Okay. And I always like to offer at the end, just a space for you to thank anybody who supported you in your work.
Well, my husband, Gerald Rawls, Ta-Nehisi Coates, of course. Toba Kadori, Christine Kim, Susan Feldman, Michael Massenburg, Rebecca Farr, all my girlfriends, Keisha Ashley, Danielle, I don't know. I have my kids.
Yeah. It sounds like you're well supported.
I am. That's great. I'm very blessed. I have a great support system, a lot of love.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Your work is amazing. I'm excited to see all that happens for you in the future. And, you know, just, I appreciate your willingness to talk about parenting too, because I think it's, you know, a conversation that doesn't always happen in the art world. So that's why we have this podcast. And, you know, just looking at women who are doing great things, who are making amazing work, and realizing that they're a mom too. It's like, oh man, I got to talk to her. You know, what's her journey? Like, how's she making it happen? So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.